Erina by ScriptCrib Publishing is based off the work by Alex Verrault of The Land of Erina. For more information, you can visit our website, scriptcrib.com. The sconces flickered along the walls of the old temple, casting eerie shadows on the ancient stone as the old man stepped carefully through the entrance. The smell of burning oil and incense hung heavily in the air, almost stifling in its intensity. He could feel a slight tremor in his hands, barely perceptible, but he knew it was there. It was always there when they gathered like this. Ahead, the room opened up to reveal a large area filled with men and women, all wearing brown robes adorned with colorful ribbons that signified their rank within the order. The man's own robe bore the purple ribbon of a senior member. As he was moved deeper into the room, he felt the weight of responsibility that came with it. At the center of the room stood an old woman with long, braided gray hair. Her name was Craybell, and she was revered by all who belonged to the order. She commanded respect and loyalty, and her voice carried the wisdom of countless years. As she addressed the assembly from atop a raised altar, he could not help but be drawn in by her presence. "Brothers and sisters," Craybell proclaimed, her voice strong and steady despite her age. "We stand at a precipice. Our world is dying, and if we do not act soon, there will be nothing left for us or our children." He glanced around the room, noting the solemn expressions on the faces of those assembled. Damar, a young initiate with a green ribbon, nervously twisted his hands in front of him. Cora, a tall woman with a blue ribbon, stared intently at Craybell, her jaw set in determination. Jarek, a grizzled veteran with a red ribbon, simply nodded as if he had already accepted the fate that awaited them all. "Too long have we hidden in the shadows," Craybell continued, her gaze sweeping across the crowd. "It is time for our order to step into the light, to continue the assimilation and bring about the growth that our world so desperately needs." He furrowed his brow, his thoughts racing. The assimilation had always been a subject of whispered conversations and furtive glances, something that was spoken of only in the most guarded of moments. For Craybell to speak of it openly like this was unprecedented. It had been some time since the last assimilation, which ended in abject failure. It was regarded that an assimilation wouldn't happen again, at least not for another generation. Now, Craybell was referencing it openly, something that gave him immense pause. "Is now truly the time, Craybell?" an older man called out, his voice quivering with concern. "The villagers throughout the land are hungry and our armies are weak. Do we have what it takes to continue the assimilation?" Craybell's eyes locked onto the old man as she considered her words, her expression a mix of empathy and resolve. "My old friend," Craybell began, her voice steady and deliberate, "I understand your fears. Our people have suffered greatly, and we have all borne witness to the cruelty of this world." She paused, letting the weight of her words sink in. "But we cannot afford to wait any longer. If we can finish acquiring the resources, we can ensure that the population of the world will thrive once again." As he sat in his chair and listened to Craybell's words to the old man, his mind raced with the implications of what she was proposing. He couldn't deny the logic of her argument, but the thought of the potential consequences that could arise from hastening the assimilation gnawed at him. "Every day we delay, more lives are lost," Craybell continued, her voice growing stronger. "Our loyalty lies with the survival of our people, and that survival hinges on the success of the assimilation." A wave of whispers rippled through the crowd, and he could feel the weight of the decision settling upon them. He glanced around the room, noting the expressions of determination and trepidation that flickered across the faces of those gathered. It was clear that no matter what path they chose, there would be consequences. "Very well," the old man said finally, his voice barely audible as he slowly lowered himself back into his seat. "We shall proceed." Craybell nodded solemnly, her eyes scanning the room one last time before she spoke. "Then let us begin the next phase. Let us bring forth a new era for our people and a brighter future for all." Time seemed to stretch onward, the minutes feeling like hours as the collective anxiety of the order pressed down upon them all. His chest tightened with each breath. He knew what was at stake, and he understood the burden of responsibility that now rested on their shoulders. Finally, Craybell raised her hand, her silvery hair catching the dim light as she turned toward the back of the room. Her eyes locked onto a large figure, partly obscured by the shadows. "Cora," she commanded, her voice echoing with authority. "It is time. Release the Rami." He stayed in his seat and watched as Cora stepped forward, her massive frame dwarfing those around her. He could see the conflict etched into the woman's features, the stoic resolve tempered by a flicker of uncertainty. Despite her doubts, Cora nodded in acquiescence, accepting the gravity of her task. "Understood, Craybell," she rumbled, her voice resonating through the chamber like the rumbling of distant thunder. "The assimilation shall continue." As Cora departed, he closed his eyes, a silent prayer weaving through his thoughts. He knew the risks, the terrible price they might pay for their actions, yet, deep within him, There burned an unwavering belief in their cause, a conviction that the future of their world depended on the success of the assimilation. But as the echoes of Korra's footsteps faded, he could not shake the gnawing fear that clung to the edges of his mind. He found himself questioning if they were truly prepared for the consequences of their choices and what it would mean for them all. "May the gods have mercy on us," he whispered, as the temple's sconces flickered like dying stars, casting long shadows across the faces of those who had chosen to walk this perilous path. The transport moved along the arid ground rapidly, stirring up dust behind it as it sped into the distance. It was a hazy, hot day in the arid wasteland of Earth. The sun, providing harsh radiation, beat down on the parched landscape with relentless intensity. The air shivered with the heat, and only the occasional call of a passing crow, something that was rare as most wildlife was extinct, echoed off in the distant mountains. The transport, a four-wheeled, heavily armored vehicle that moved silently across the arid terrain like an ocean barge through water, was one of the few ground transports capable of surviving the intense radiation on the Earth's surface. It was filled with advanced computers, weaponry, and sensors, all geared for keeping the people of Earth safe and maintaining order. The carapace of the transport was thick and insulated, shielding those inside from the dangers of the environment. The sun pelted down dangerous rays that, if exposed to skin for too long, would melt it into nothingness. When out in the open, a person needed a way to keep all their skin covered at all times. Inside the transport, the four soldiers were strapped into their chairs and covered by gear to keep them safe from harm. Upon their helmets, each soldier wore a sleek visor that would protect his face in battle. Against their bodies lay assault rifles and sniper rifles, sidearms, and bayonets. They were burdened with vests upon which were housed extra cartridges for every type of weapon they carried. Wires ran through each piece of the armor and were attached to various sensors. The soldiers' biometrics were monitored at all times, ensuring that radiation wasn't leaking into their suit. In the driver's seat, Buck kept his hands firmly on the wheel as he maneuvered the transport to its destination. Young, determined, and focused, Buck had grown up in Poe. He was just over 20 years old and came up through the academy, joining the Soda City Outlet as soon as he was eligible. His parents served the United Nations Guard prior to the foundation of Eden, and in Buck's mind, serving humanity was in his blood. His parents died during the migration to Eden, succumbing to the intense radiation on Earth while protecting those around them. He held their memories close to his heart and did what he could to honor them. Serving Poe and humanity was how he did it, and he did it proudly. Beside Buck was Ancient, the oldest member of the battalion. While in the transport, Ancient was charged with navigation and ensuring the transport didn't run into any issues along the way. He was one of the oldest members in the Protectors of Eden, having served the old United Nations Guard prior to the calamity that destroyed the surface of the Earth. His gray hair and grizzled exterior set him apart from the rest of the force, where most of his allies who were his age were in a position of leadership. Ancient had little use for that. He preferred the front lines. He preferred directly serving the people of Soda City and the rest of Eden. In the back seat, both Kron and Red were staring at the monitors to keep an eye on what was around them and what was happening at their destination. Satellites in low orbit were trained on the terrain around them, as well as above their target. Both men, clad in full armor with their weapons at their side, stared at the monitors to ensure that no one left the target. The mission had been years in the making, and now it was finally coming to fruition. Reginald Mitten, public enemy number one for Soda City, was soon to be brought to justice. Red was the youngest member of the battalion, having just graduated from the academy. He had fiery red hair and an immense temper. He was skilled with computers and was adequate with most any weapon placed in front of him. He was quick to fire his weapon and wasn't a very skilled negotiator, leading to leadership keeping him away from serving on the streets and instead fighting on the surface. Kron was the most renowned and gifted soldier of the four and was the de facto leader of the battalion. He was just over 30 years old and was a gifted field tactician, having served in various militaries prior to the calamity when he immediately joined the Protectors of Eden. His arms, legs, and torso were covered in tattoos, all depicting the battles that he fought. The leadership of Poe viewed Kron as an asset and tried to protect him where able. He was known for taking unnecessary risks, but he was also regarded for achieving his goals. The transport rolled to a stop in front of their destination, one of the few homes still standing in a wasteland subdivision, where at one time, several houses all stood, one beside another on each side of the street. Now, only a few of the homes still stood. Radiation and vandalism had taken its toll on the surface of the Earth, making structures that still stood remarkably valuable and fought over. Many of the surface dwellers, referred to as Outlanders, lived in caves and caverns attached to underground water sources, having to scavenge for any and everything they had. They did not live in prosperous life, but one encompassed by the overall need for survival. Food was scarce, but they lived outside the rules and the protection of the Protectors of Eden. Buck reached forward and pulled a lever, placing the transport in park and locking the wheels. "We're here," he announced. The other three members of Poe and the transport rose to their feet and inspected their gear, ensuring that no sliver of skin was exposed to the elements. Each man reached for their rifles, and once equipped and covered, motioned for Kron to open the back of the transport. Their commander reached over to a small console and pressed a few buttons before the back of the transport opened up. The blinding sun pierced through the fresh opening. Each soldier winced, blinded by the rays of the sun. Their helmets protected them from the radiation, but their eyes were not shielded from the brightness of the sun. Ancient raised his hand and placed it in front of his face, shielding his eyes from the sun while still wincing. "You'd think by now they'd put a sun shield in these helmets," he complained while the others stood beside him. Kron chuckled and stepped forward. "I don't think that's an expense they view as even remotely worth it. So long as we're able to pull a trigger, that's all the bosses care about," he countered before walking out of the transport. His boots crunched against the arid dirt as he made his way out into the harsh elements. Ancient was quick to follow, eager to complete the mission and return to the barracks, while both Red and Buck moved a bit slower. Buck because he was stiff from sitting behind the controls of the transport, Red because he didn't know the exact parameters of the mission. As Buck and Red made their way out onto the Earth's arid surface, Kron and Ancient were examining the data coming into the computers on their suits. The terminals located on their wrists were feeding information up to their helmets, displaying things for them to see on the screen. Data from Soda City was flowing freely to the transport, which was then being fed to their suits. The higher-ups were able to watch what was happening in real time, meaning the soldiers had to be on their best behavior. "Alright, you all got the briefing," announced Kron as he stepped past his three allies toward the house. "Reginald Mitten is in there. We're here to extract him, preferably alive." Ancient scoffed and shook his head. "Preferably." "He'll get back to Soda City with his heart beating," announced Buck with a wry grin. "I can't guarantee anything else." Kron rolled his eyes and stepped toward the house. "He'll get back to Soda City alive. At least that's the plan." The three other Poe soldiers all nodded in unison. They all held onto their rifles and followed Kron through the arid hellscape toward the dilapidated home in the distance. Once in front of the doorway, Kron pressed a few buttons on his rifle, which was tethered to the terminal on his wrist. The computers attached to his suit monitored his weapon, as well as his biometrics. Everything was being watched while they were on the Earth's surface, something that gave Kron pause, as well as peace. Soda City, as well as the rest of Eden, would see their triumph, but there was a chance they could see their failures. Kron took a deep, determined breath as he marched into the destroyed home. His rifle was clutched tightly in his hands, and his peripheral vision he could see Red, Ancient, and Buck flanked beside him. The brown wasteland around them was once filled with lush grass and tall trees. At one time, children played in the yards and animals made nests in the shrubs. This new Earth, the hellscape on the surface, was but a tomb for those who couldn't make it to Eden. Many chose to resist the warnings. Many chose to ignore them. Most everyone who stayed met the same fate, a violent death to dangerous radiation exposure. The home was once in the center of a sprawling subdivision, but 12 years had taken a toll on the world. Though several structures remained, they were but husks of their former selves. Immense radiation had warped the exteriors, and the insides were heavily vandalized, though some of them still stood to protect the Outlanders from the powerful energy of the sun during the day. At night, it was safe to move about, but during the day, it could spell certain death if not wearing the proper equipment. The visors on each of their helmets glowed brightly, searching for any sign of life while they advanced through the small building. Every step that they made resounded deeply in the empty hollows of the home. Kron scoffed when Buck announced that there wasn't anything showing up on the sensors. He knew their mark was here somewhere. He'd make sure of it. As they walked through the home, they noticed the scenery closely. "Odd place," said Red through his mouthpiece as he walked into the kitchen. As the youngest member of the crew, he was unfamiliar with the cultures and norms from before the Calamity. The table was set with four plates sitting in position in front of each chair with silverware adorned on both sides. They continued to walk through to reach the living room to find several cups and saucers sitting on a table in between the couch and television set. "It's as if the world stopped," he continued. "It did," said Kron as they continued to move through the living room, reaching the stairs and looking up through their sensors before continuing. "Red, Ancient, hang out down here and make sure no one cuts off our flank. Buck and I will investigate upstairs." "Affirmative, Commander," acknowledged Red and Ancient simultaneously as they positioned themselves near the stairs, using their sensors to keep an eye on anything moving. With a soft exhale, Buck took the first step up the stairs with Kron following close behind him, taking each step slowly as to not alert anyone of their presence. Though their sensors were showing no lifeforms present, they were aware that their target, Reginald Mitten, had eluded them before. Regarded as Public Enemy Number 1 and referred to as one of the most dangerous men in Eden, Mitten possessed a ruthless nature that was only matched by his ability to evade Poe. He was a smuggler, a thief, and an assassin, and soon he was going to be an inmate in the custody of Poe. Buck stepped into the first room at the top of the stairs and walked in slowly. He turned his gun toward the bed and looked over to see their target lying motionless. "Got him," he whispered as Kron walked into the room behind him, both training their weapons onto his chest. Sensors are showing that he is breathing and that his heart is beating, but only at 20 beats per minute. How is that possible? Asked Kron as he stepped closer to Mitten. Could it be cybernetics? I've never seen a cybernetic implant that allowed the heart to not beat as much, replied Buck as he moved in closer. If anything, cybernetics put more of a strain on it. He could have a new heart, whispered Ancient through the headset from downstairs. Buck and Kron glanced over at each other before Buck stepped over to the other end of the bed, keeping his gun trained on Mitten as they surrounded him. We'll find out soon enough, he said as he reached his arm out and shook Mitten, bringing him out of a deep sleep. Reginald Mitten, you're under arrest, he screamed as he leaped onto the bed and turned him over, grabbing both of his hands and placing them behind his back. Kron walked forward and secured his hands with cuffs, followed by shackles on his ankles. We got him, said Kron with a smile as he connected the chains between both sets of restraints. We finally got him. Mitten was incredibly groggy as he was assisted off the bed by the two soldiers and pushed toward the stairs. Prepare the transport, Red. This guy has a court date to attend. Hey, thanks for listening to Arena. For more information on Arena and any other of our audio dramas and products, please visit us at scribcrib.com or you can check us out on Facebook, Reddit, or Twitter.